Today, we'll have the voice of Mickey Mouse, Brett Iwin. That's coming up on this episode 249 of WW Prep to Go. Hello and welcome to WW Prep to Go, where we talk strategy and ideas for people planning their Disney World trips. I am your host, Shannon Albert, from WDWPrepSchool.com. Thank you for being here for episode 249, almost to 250 next week. These numbers are getting big. I am happy to be here today with another interview. I'm not sure that the name Brett Iwin is known by everyone, but certainly the voice of Mickey Mouse is. He is an amazing human being, so I was really happy to talk to him, not about him, for this interview, and you'll find out exactly why in just a minute. As usual, I do want to remind you to follow on social media. That's where we have been connecting to so many people, recently especially, but as always. And that is a way for us to make this a two-way conversation. I also want to mention that there's a lot of hubbub in the theme park community, you know, about announcements being made. Disney Springs just recently, they announced it was reopening. And so if any major announcements come out, like the parks are definitely reopening, we have the dates, we'll do a special episode and talk about that. But until we have confirmation, we will just sit and wait. So without further ado, I want to go to my conversation with Brett. Welcome to the podcast, Brett.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
I am so excited to talk to you. But for people that don't know who you are, can you explain?
Well, I am a voice actor, and you might not recognize this voice, but mostly people recognize me for this one.
Well, hi, everybody. It's me, Mickey Mouse.
Because I am the voice of Mickey Mouse.
Yes, you are. You are the fourth voice of Mickey Mouse.
Correct. Yes.
Yes. And I would say you are a lot more than just a voice actor. You bring a lot of passion, history, and frankly, Walt energy to the job, if you'll allow me to say that.
That is very nice to hear. Thank you. That's a great compliment.
That's why I was excited to talk to you, because maybe talking to any voice actor wouldn't be super exciting, but you have a lot of good stories behind your journey to get here. So I would love to talk about that, and then we can talk like you and your commonalities with Walt, and then you as a separate person all on your own. So I want to start with your interests in animation and illustration, because I think that's kind of where it began for you as a kid.
Yeah, no, that's extremely accurate. I grew up just with a very curious, creative mind. I loved imagination and creating things, and drawing was one of those outlets that I gravitated towards very early on. And with that, I started to find myself appreciating cartoons, specifically the old Mickey, Donald, Goofy cartoons from Disney. And that was thanks to my parents. They introduced me to all of that at a very young age. But one of my favorite things to do was watch the cartoons with my dad, and we'd lay on the floor, and then he'd pause them, and we would draw the characters together. So, you know, I really was introduced to a whole world of artistic expression thanks to Disney cartoons, because as a lot of us know, Walt wasn't just making silly cartoons. He was using the cartoons as a way of experimenting with different art techniques and storytelling techniques. And I think that was all evident. So yeah, I grew up just like being fascinated by the process of animation, because you would draw this character and you would give it life, because, you know, as it's said, animation is the illusion of life. And I just, it was incredible to me to be able to create that. And so I, you know, got an art desk, and I saved up my money to buy an animation disc, which is a device that sits on your desk and has pegs on it that line up all the paper together in the same position, so that when you're animating and going drawing to drawing to drawing, you have a guide check. It keeps everything in line. And so I would create my own little cartoons, and I'd use my uncle's gigantic VHS video camera to record it frame by frame. Later on, I went and started taking some art classes at a local, art center here in Pasadena. Thankfully, my parents saw my passion and recognized that that glimpse of talent, I guess. And so they signed me up and I started taking more animation classes. And, you know, one thing led to another. And before I even realized it, I had aspirations and a career path kind of planned. I reached out to Disney very young. I think I was 11. I recently found the letter over the past couple of years that I typed up on a typewriter and sent to the Walt Disney Studios asking if they could hire me or at least allow me to hang out with them to serve coffee or sharpen pencils with the Disney animators. I got a response, a very polite response that said, you know, unfortunately, we can't hire you. You're too young, but we appreciate your interest. And here are some tips to help you get here eventually. So they outlined the books I should read, the schools I should consider, and just like the daily rituals of drawing and observing. So it had a huge impact on me. So yeah, all of that to say, art and animation definitely influenced where I am today, but it kind of was the originating, little bit of inspiration.
Yeah, so that's kind of where it all started. Obviously, your Disney dreams turned into something different.
a little bit. Yep.
but you got there on another path. One other thing that I know that you had a passion for as a child, which I think is so coincidental, is trains.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So at the same time that you're doing all the animation and your artistic endeavors, you also really like the trains. So how did that start?
Yeah, well, similarly, with the art, I have to credit my parents for this one as well, and specifically my dad. My dad was a huge train, still is a huge train aficionado. Specifically, he loves modeling trains. So I can't remember a time when there wasn't a modeled train set in the house or in the backyard garden. And so, you know, I grew up, I can remember being very young, and this room that eventually turned into our toy room first housed my dad's model train layout. And it's his vehicle for storytelling, because you'd look at all the rock formations and the little buildings and the towns and the little figurines that he'd put out, the people doing their tasks of, you know, loading a truck or, tying up their horse or raising a flag. And all of that in the context of this train environment, it just was, you know, to me, there was nothing cooler, because I could sit and stare at all these little vignettes and imagine these stories. And to me, like, it all came to life. So maybe the only thing kinetically moving was that train around the track. But in my mind, the whole world came to life. And so that started a fascination with models and model trains and whatnot. And then, we also took our family vacations, usually centered around visiting a train, which wasn't always my mom's top choice, but she was a team player and went along with it. I'm the oldest of four boys, so she was outnumbered, and the five boys would all want to go to see these trains. And so she would come along and be enthusiastic about it. But we visited all kinds of railways and railroads around the country growing up, and I just saw these machines, and again, kind of in the vein of that creative mind and design mind, I was fascinated by the design of them, the artistic integrity that exists within that engineering feat, but then also just the fact that they also came to life. So these machines, you know, I was fascinated by these models and imagining them come to life, but I'm watching these machines, these big hunks of metal, kind of start breathing. And I've heard it said that like a steam locomotive is alive because it requires all of the elements. It requires air, water, fire, and earth to survive. And operating one, I've since learned, is a very delicate balance of feeling, of engineering, of science. And so all of that was just like really fascinating to me. And so, yes, I've been a self-proclaimed train nerd for quite some time. And then just a couple of years ago, I decided, you know what? I love these trains. I love the models. I love visiting railroads and I love watching, but it's always been my bucket list item to go drive a train. Like, I want to operate a steam locomotive. And that was something I imagined I was going to wait till, you know, I was in my 60s and maybe retired and had a little bit more time to pursue it. Well, one day I just remember thinking, why wait? Like, what am I waiting for? So I thankfully had made some contacts, ironically through Disney, actually, and reached out to this family that operates a railroad in the Fresno area. And they'd done some work with Disney. And I said, you know, we have some mutual contacts. I'm interested in doing this. And they said, come on up. We'll teach you what we know. And they did. They allowed me to come up a couple times, visit with them, learn some stuff. That eventually led to me getting a job at a theme park here in Southern California called Knott's Berry Farm. And they have two full-size steam locomotives. And so I worked with them as a steam mechanic and locomotive engineer for a while. And it was a blast. So I made that bucket list item come true a lot sooner than I thought. And it's, you know, now only motivated me to pursue that nerdy side even more. And now I can't stop, because once you get behind the controls of an antique steam locomotive, there's nothing in the world quite like it. And so, yeah, it's an ongoing passion of mine for sure.
Yeah, it seems like a tough outlet, though. Like, where do you go? You know, if you're not at Knott's Berry Farm, where are you going for your change fix?
Yeah, it's not exactly something you just, you know, go out and buy like a car. So I have my model trains that run in my backyard. I have a little garden railroad as well as my dad still has his. My brother still has his. So, you know, we kind of feed that need through that aspect. I'm still involved in a few little railroads around the country. And so I had the opportunity to volunteer with them. It's not beyond me to be thinking about how do I someday maybe have a steam locomotive in my backyard like Walt did. Maybe a little bit bigger, but you know, that's still a dream of mine. So something I'm still seriously pursuing and thinking about all the time, because it's one of the things that I loved about pursuing the trains is that it was a challenge to me to learn a new skill set. And I've discovered when looking back over the past 37, 38, how old am I? I forget. In the past years, I've realized that the one driving force has always been this desire to learn. And the trains allowed that for me. And now, you know, I'm taking that experience and going, okay, well, what's next? What am I going to do with this knowledge of steam locomotive engineering? Am I going to just let that be a hobby thing that I did once upon a time, or am I still going to do it? And I've got some ideas, and I'm working with my brother about what those ideas could look like. So yeah, we'll see. Stay tuned for the next episode. Maybe I'll reveal what that is.
Yeah, stay tuned. You described Knott's Berry Farm as being a Southern California theme park, but it is in fact a mile from Disneyland, which is super ironic.
It is, yes. And it's got a great history. I mean, it's, they bill it as America's first theme park because it really was. It was this great place with a guy, Walter Knott, who had a desire to kind of set up an environment for guests to enjoy while they were waiting for his wife's chicken dinner at their restaurant on a literal berry farm.
It's delicious food, isn't it?
Oh my gosh. You know what? We're in the middle of the safe at home movement right now, but I can't tell you how many times I've thought about that chicken dinner and how much I wish I could just get in the car, drive down, pick some up and come back, because there's nothing like it. And those biscuits.
Yes. Mm, so someday good. We'll
someday.
Get back.
Yes. Goals.
Yes. So we've got animation and the trains, but another connection that you have is Kansas City. You spent some time there before this job.
That's
right. And Walt famously did as well.
Yeah.
So can you describe your time? And by the way, I'm from Kansas City. So I have personal interest.
Okay.
I live in Texas now, but I grew up in Kansas City.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, we're new besties then. I love Kansas City. And it really was kind of an unexpected, as most of the things that have happened in my life have been. It was a little bit of an unexpected turn, but was going to art school in Florida at Ringling College of Art and Design. And this great group two women actually who came down from Hallmark to lead a workshop with the intent of eventually recruiting from that workshop for Hallmark cards. And I fell in love with them and their process and what they taught us. And then eventually after graduation was offered a job with Hallmark. So I moved from Florida up to Kansas City. I was there for 5 years and I loved it. That city, you know, it's a lot of Midwestern towns can often be looked over or considered flyover states, but it had such a rich history and a tie to the creative and artistic community. It fostered so much of my creative thinking, as well as a lot of personal things for me. So It's always near and dear to my heart. And yes, the Disney thing was never lost on me. You know, I, before moving, had a book about Walt in Kansas City because he spent a great deal of his pre-adult and adult life there. You know, he kind of learned animation in Kansas City and at the Kansas City Slide ad company. And then he started up Laugh-O-Gram Studios in Kansas City, where he began the Alice comedies and got his business and animation started. So that location was just a few miles away from my house, you know, where he got on the train to head to Hollywood eventually. It was Union Station in Kansas City, a place that I frequented and loved because, again, trains. Yeah, it was great. I had a great experience living there. I love going back to visit, but it was always even better knowing that Walt had some history there as well.
Did you ever have a chance to visit Marceline?
I did. So I visited Marceline once, and it was an inadvertent visit. I was driving up to Illinois, central Illinois. So we passed through it, and it was only that I saw the sign and I thought, oh, Marceline. I know Marceline. And so my brother and I pulled off. I had my dog Lily with me, and we took a little walk around the town. But I think it was a Sunday, and so everything was closed. So I got to see it, and it's great to see the main street and see the school and the train depot. Since, of course, I've gotten to meet a lot of the folks who work at the Walt Disney Hometown Museum in Marceline. And I hope one of these days to be able to make it out for one of their events or at least just a personal visit, because I know they've done some great stuff out there, and I would love to see what they're doing to preserve that piece of Walt's story.
Yeah, I think you would definitely appreciate it.
So. I want to see the barn too, because I have plans to build a barn like that someday. So, you know, inspiration.
That's right. You got to start somewhere. Yep. So from Kansas City, if I'm not mistaken, that is when you got the email that there was an opening for the voice of Mickey Mouse.
That's right. Yeah. So again, working at Hallmark, and I like to tell the story that, you know, I was at home that day because I had taken a day off of work to work on my bathroom. I was remodeling it. And it's that part of the story is important to me because I was alone. I was alone all day. I was with my dog and I was talking like Mickey Mouse just for fun. And I remember thinking, wow, whoever has that job is so lucky. What a great job. And I had been aware, I had the Disney Treasures collections and on that had a great interview with Wayne and Russi and interview with Tony Anselmo and with Bill Farmer and the others. So I had watched it, but I guess it just really wasn't something that was stuck in my brain to know like who the actors were. But I just remember thinking, wow, how cool is that? Well, anyway, that night I go to bed, get in bed, and I open my computer and check my email. And I had an email that said, do you want to be the voice of Mickey Mouse? That was the subject line. And my initial thought was my friends were making fun of me because they must have stopped by and heard me talking like Mickey, and they've concocted this elaborate joke to be like, haha, we know what you did. So I kept reading, you know, as my heart rate's increasing, and realized, no, it was real. My friend, Jamie, her last name was Landy's back then, now Roe, graduated from Ringling with me and got a job at Pixar as an animator, and she's still there. But she got this internal email that was circulated throughout the Walt Disney Company explaining that they were looking for an understudy for the voice of Mickey Mouse, who at that time was Wayne Allwine. And Wayne had been doing the voice since 1977. It was now 2009. He'd been doing it 32 years. And it was becoming harder and harder for him to sustain the falsetto. So they decided now was the time to find somebody who could work with him and then maybe eventually take over. Now, as a huge Disney fan and specifically Mickey fan, there was no way I was going to let that opportunity go by because as far as I was concerned, I just wanted to be able to say, I auditioned to be the voice of Mickey Mouse. You know, I imagine walking into a party and be like, hey guys, how's it going? Hey, what have you been up to? Oh, you know, well, I auditioned to be Mickey Mouse last week. I thought that was going to be great. So I followed the instructions and you had to call in to a number and leave your name and record your audition, which was matching some audio samples they provided. I did that. And then I waited and I went back to my normal life working at Hallmark. But of course, the whole time this was in the back of my head thinking, I wonder what's happening. Did they find somebody? What's going on? Is anybody else talking about this? So it kind of started a daily obsession of getting to work. Before I'd even open my work email, I would Google voice of Mickey Mouse. and see if anyone was talking about it. Well, eventually one day I got a call and I recognized the area code being LA. And they said, hey, we got your audition. We loved it. We'd love to hear more from you. How about you come in for a callback audition? Which required me flying myself to Burbank. So absolutely, I booked that ticket right away, flew myself out, did the callback audition. It was during that audition that they explained to me Wayne had actually had to go to the hospital because a lot of what he was dealing with were some health-related issues. And so he was in the hospital, so I didn't get to meet him. But we did the audition, and they said, oh, well, don't call us, we'll call you. So then I waited again and did my daily searches again. And one day, the search turned back results, and it shared that Wayne had sadly passed away. Which is completely unexpected for me, not knowing just how serious his health condition was. But at that point, looking for an understudy switched to looking for someone to recast with.
No pressure.
No pressure at all. Yeah. So here I was thinking I was going to potentially enter into this situation being trained, and now instead they just needed somebody to come in. And don't get me wrong, there was a lot of training to be done via the directors and the writers and the other cast members, Bill and Tony and Wayne's wife, Rusi. Yeah, it really was just kind of like trial by fire, jump in.
By the way, Wayne's wife, Rusi, is the voice of Minnie Mouse, for those who don't know.
Yes, yes. And sadly, Rusi passed away last June, but she was the voice of Minnie for many, many years. And together with Wayne, they were Mickey and Minnie. So something that will never be quite the same or ever really duplicated.
Yeah, I was at D23 Expo last summer, and this was all pretty fresh to you guys. Well, to all of us, but you guys, yeah, who knew her. So that was a very emotional time to, yeah, talk about her.
It's still tough. It's hard for me to even acknowledge that she's no longer with us, because Rusi was just this ball of light and positivity wherever she went. And she just made everyone smile and laugh, and she knew how to laugh. And listening to her, you know, like before I ever met her, I heard her coming down the hallway and I heard her laughing. And Rusi's voice was a lot like Minnie's. She did a little bit to change it, but when you heard Rusi, you heard Minnie. And she was just such a delight and always so warm, and she gave the best hugs. You know, we always joked that a session would never start on time if it was Rusi's, because she would be a little bit late. And then when she got there, she needed at least an hour to say hi to everybody, hear about their kids, their dogs, their friends, their family. But then if I was following her and I came in, then of course there was the whole half an hour of her talking to me and hearing how my dogs were. And she cared so much. And the fact that she made the effort to include me, to get to know me, and even just like open up the line for me to come to her and get advice, it meant so much, because I can't imagine having worked so long and so closely with the love of her life to then have a new guy step in. It was not easy. But she was above that, and she extended that love to me, which is something I will be forever grateful for.
Yeah, I think the grace is amazing, because she was obviously going through her own grief, but it's not your fault. You know, you're there, yeah, to do a job, and she's obviously an important part of it. So I, yeah, think that's lovely that you guys had that relationship.
I think that's a great way to put it.
So the year was 2009 when you ultimately did become the fourth voice of Mickey Mouse. And so you've moved to California. And what are some of the different projects that you work on, like video games and stuff like that?
Okay, yeah. So my first thing out of the gate was a little cavalcade parade at Animal Kingdom. It was called the Adventurers Celebration. It was the end of the day type of thing. Mickey came in on a truck, and it was something Wayne had already done, but they were changing the script slightly, and so I had to re-record the whole thing. So that was fun, because I love the Disney parks. And then I think right after that, I started doing Disney on Ice programs. So I did a couple shows for Disney on Ice, which were a lot bigger productions, required a lot more recording time. Often a lot more yelling, because you're filling an arena. And then a lot of toys. I never realized how many Mickey toys existed, because the type of fan I was definitely aware of the parks and any feature film, sometimes cartoons. But, you know, back then it was Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, which I wasn't a demographic for. But I definitely did not know how many talking toys came out. I did a ton of toys to begin with. Eventually, then the video games came into play and I started working on, can't remember what came first, but it may have been a Kingdom Hearts game, and then Epic Mickey came, and then Castle of Illusions, and then a lot of apps, and as technology's grown, all of that has changed. So it was just a whole lot of everything starting out, and it continues to be that way, with the exception of I'm working on a lot more TV series now, which is great, because that's a whole different element to the character.
Yeah, it seems like a unique position for a voice actor that you have so much to do.
It definitely is. And, you know, I get asked a lot if I do other voices and or if I'm allowed to even. And the answer is yes, I could do voice acting for anything else. You know, I'm not an official Disney cast member. I'm an honorary one. It's an honor I hold very dear to my heart. So I'm basically a free agent. I'm a contracted talent. I'm an actor, which means that as an actor, we can go get a job just about anywhere. And Roosie did that. Roosie worked on The Simpsons and with the Muppet Babies and of course, Disney and all a few different characters. Bill Farmer does that as well. And Bill Farmer's the voice of Goofy. I should mention that. I've mentioned his name a few times and not mentioned his character. When people ask me that, I say, I sure could. I could go get some other jobs. And I've done some little things here or there that nobody would really probably care about. But the blessing of Mickey is that Mickey, the character, is so busy. It means that as an actor, I get to be just as busy because there's a plethora of things for me to do. So, you know, I often have times where I think, gosh, I wonder what would it be like if I was pursuing other voice acting gigs right now? Because, you know, I needed that day to recover between that session and my next session. And I, you know, am still an artist and a designer, and I still do that and have that side of my life. And I can't imagine giving that up completely to just do voice acting. So I'm very grateful that Mickey does work as often as he does, because it keeps me busy for sure.
But I think one thing that might surprise people is that you're not an employee of Disney.
Yeah, I know. Maybe surprised me a little bit. I'm trying to remember. I think I was aware enough to know that in entertainment, an actor usually has a contract for a certain amount of time. And that was one of the questions I asked off the bat was, well, where's my contract? What do I sign? And they said, no contract. So I get contracted each time there's a job, because I could go in and record a toy, and that toy contract looks totally different than if I go in and record a TV episode. And that TV episode looks totally different if I go in and record a parade for Disneyland. So each time I get called in, it's a new contract. So I am the official voice. I am the guy that they call, and it's, you know, like a gentleman's agreement, I guess you could say, a handshake agreement. Cause it's, you know, Disney prides themselves in consistency of brand. And so to have one actor perform a character, for as long as possible means that that character, no matter where you hear him, is going to be consistent and deliver that same unique experience. I feel like I've gone on a tangent and I can't remember what your question was.
No, it was about not being an employee.
Oh, yeah. So, I am not an employee.
But you are a SAG member, which is some layer of protection in there, right?
Yes. So I, you know, as anyone who works in the business would tell you, you have to be a union member. So I have to be a SAG member in order to work. Which is great. That's where I get my health benefits from and my retirement benefits from. And the Disney side of thing is just the joy. I'm just so lucky that I get to even, you know, work for Disney. And I have a contractor ID, so I can visit the Disney studio lot. I can go to the parks. I get those kind of perks. But, you know, when you look me up on the Disney hub, as it were, I don't pop up as a traditional employee or cast member.
So when work does come to you, you get like an email that says we've got this project coming up, and then you report to any one of a number of places?
Basically, so, you know, I have an agent and an agency I work through. And so Disney will, whatever division it is of Disney, will contact my agency and say, hey, we have this project for Brett. My agent will then ask me if that date or time they proposed works for me. If it does, I say yes. And they kind of work as the middleman and they make sure that the contracts are up to par and that the timing and all of that stuff works. And then they will coordinate the recording session, which could be at a number of locations. Most of the time we work out of one, just because we've developed a great working relationship with the sound engineers and they understand the character and the process. So, you know, I'll go there for a lot of them, like video games and toys and books and stuff like that. For the TV show, we work out of a couple other different studios. So it just depends on the project, but it's usually around two or three locations that I can depend on going to. It'll be booked. It'll be scheduled. I get the script. If it's a TV show, I get the script ahead of time. For the other stuff, I usually don't see it until I walk into the booth, but I'll get there. We'll lay down the tracks, record it, and then my job's done. Unless they needed something additional and they'll call me back. But usually, you know, people are often surprised that a TV episode that may be a 22-minute episode, I'll go in and I think it maybe takes me, you know, usually around 2 hours, 2 or 3 hours to record that episode. And I'm by myself. I'm not with the other characters. We do it all independently and then they mix it together in the end. But I'll record that episode and then that's the last I see of it until it comes on TV. You know, we're not really involved in the process that long, considering all the other work that has to happen.
I want to talk about that in just a second, because I know you're not always aware when things come out.
Yeah.
You get to see it. But I assume that one of the places that you record is the place you sent that letter as an 11-year-old Brett.
Yeah. I have, you know what? I'm trying to think. I have recorded at the Disney Feature Animation Building before. You're right. And that is the place that I sent my letter. I never thought about it like that, but wow, I made it. I made it. Oh my gosh.
I feel there's a lot of full circle moments in your life. I would just maybe add that to the list.
I'm going to add that one to the list now. It's like becomes top of my awareness level here.
That's right. So on these projects, how much is just literally you going in to record and how much of it is like the responsibility of the character?
Well, I think to an extent, every project comes with that higher level of responsibility because, you know, there are a lot of people that contribute to each and every project, writers, directors, producers, and everyone's aware and usually striving towards the same goal of preserving the character and making sure he's perceived in the best light, that he's on brand. But, you know, a voice is a very powerful thing. You can never meet somebody, but you can hear them. And so much of our personality, our mood, our intent comes through the sounds we make with our voice. And so, I approach each project with the same level of seriousness, I guess, or same level of responsibility in that I want to do the best job possible portraying him. Now, you know, sometimes there's only so many ways you can read the alphabet and overthink, you know, the character intent. Mm-hmm. But thankfully, it's, you know, the longer you do it, the easier it becomes to just kind of automatically click into that character vein, I guess.
Right.
And Bill Farmer, again, voice of Goofy, said to me very early on, he said, now, do you feel like when you're doing the voice, you're focusing on the voice, on the sound? And I said, oh, yeah, like, I'm terrified every time I stand in front of the microphone. I used to think like, I hope it comes out this time. I hope I can sustain those notes. I hope I can do the laugh. And he goes, well, you know, I felt that way too. Give it 3 to 5 years and you'll just click into the character and it'll just become second nature to you and you'll focus so much more on the acting. And he wasn't wrong. Like I find myself so comfortable in the portrayal of Mickey in that I know how he sounds. I know how he says things. I know how he acts, how he feels, what his intents are. And I know those key character points so that I know how far to stray or not stray from. So I can really just kind of devote myself to acting out the moments, whether it's a silly antic on a TV show or a really serious phone call. to a child who's not having a great day. Like, it just becomes easy. It's a lot more natural, I guess, is the best word, in the portrayal.
At this point, it's seeped into you.
It definitely has. And to go back to those interviews I mentioned of Wayne and Russi on the Disney Treasures, I remember that was one of the questions Leonard Maltin asked Wayne is, you know, how much of the character do you see in yourself? And Wayne had a really great way of answering it in that he, and I won't quote him verbatim at all, but he basically said, you know, after all this time, you start to realize that you influence the character less than the character influences you. And I think that's definitely safer to say about myself in that I don't, you know, a character like Mickey, where he's been established for over 90 years now and is really a personification of Walt himself. You know, it's not my job to come in and give my Brett spin on things. Like, I'm not here to say, hey, let me do this because I think Mickey would be cooler if I did that. I'm doing my best job to keep Walt's Mickey alive. But within that, that character definitely influences me because I've gotten so used to thinking like Mickey that it's, I'd like to think, definitely made me a better person for it. You know, just acknowledging those characteristics that Mickey possesses and at least wanting to be more like him.
Right. Yeah, I think I understand that. And I imagine when you first started, there was just so much to learn all at once because you weren't necessarily an actor. You certainly weren't a voice actor. Like, there's a lot. And now you've had more than 10 years of practice.
Yeah. There was a lot to take in. It was like, well, how, what do you mean? What does a contract look like? What does a session look like? What should I be doing with my voice to sustain it? Should I be pursuing art, or should I only be taking acting classes and improv classes? How many questions are okay to ask versus just assuming? And so, yeah, it was a huge learning curve. But again, going back to the point I made a lot earlier, in that I love growth, I love challenge, and I may not have seen it as this at the time, but looking back now, I think I was able to get through it because it was a challenge. It was an exciting time of learning. It was something I'd never done before, and so I had to challenge myself to step into the, okay, maybe I never dreamed of or planned on becoming a voice actor, but I'm here. The opportunity is in front of me, so let me prove it to myself. Not really anybody else, but let me prove it to myself that I can do this. And I think that was one of the main driving forces that got me through that initial shock and trying time. And it's allowed me now to be able to sit back and go, oh, okay, yeah. But I mean, and I should, little asterisk there, I'm not a very confident person. And so I don't know that I'll ever be at a place where I'm like, yeah, I got this. I'm a voice actor now. It still seems weird to me to say I'm a voice actor, and I felt that way a little bit as an illustrator. You know, I got a job with Hallmark greeting cards. I had a degree in illustration, and I still found myself being like, well, I'm not as good as those other people. And, you know, maybe for me, it's just kind of a joke. Maybe I wiggled through and somehow got this. Maybe that's a personality default.
That's called imposter syndrome.
Imposter syndrome. That's right. I've heard that. And that's, yes, I have that. I majorly have that.
Everyone does. We all feel like we're pretending.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't help that you've got a mouse's voice in your head like I do. It definitely makes you feel like you're a little crazy.
Okay. So you mentioned that you will go into a booth, record your part, and then you don't see the project until later. So I want to talk about Fantasmic.
Okay.
This is primarily a Parks podcast, but also it's a great story. You grew up loving Fantasmic,
that
right?
Is right. Yes. Yeah. It was my favorite show. I'll never forget when it debuted in 92. I was there on a trip with my grandparents and my parents, and they kept talking about this new Fantasmic show that was happening, but you had to get a seat early on. So my grandma sat and took the spot for all of us. We went and did our thing, and then we eventually joined her. And from the time we left her to find her spot and then went and rode some other rides and came back, these towers had come out of the ground and everyone was gathered around. And then the music started to swell, and it was coming out of this rock that was right next to us in the garden. And I thought, what is happening? This place that I had walked through all day long and been looking at this island across the rivers of America there, all of a sudden lights were coming on, and then Mickey appears and fireworks. And it was this amazing what I always say, quintessential Disney moment of magic being created. And from that point on, I was fascinated. I loved the soundtrack. I loved the characters. I loved the voices. I loved the theatrics of it all. So I was obsessed.
Is that where you first started experimenting with the voice too?
Yeah. So on a later trip, my dad actually purchased the soundtrack for me because he was tired, understandably so, after taking us boys around for the day. And he didn't want to stay for Fantasmic. He said, I'll buy you the soundtrack. When we get home, we can listen to it. And we did. And then I just listened to it over and over and over again, eventually leading to my brother and I putting on our own little Fantasmic shows. I started doing it alone in my bedroom. I remember I would listen and I would emulate and act out all the characters. And with that came doing my character impressions. And yeah, one time I remember doing Mickey's voice and thinking, oh, I kind of got an ear for that. It kind of sounds like Mickey. I don't even think I'd hit puberty yet. And then puberty kicked in and my voice changed and I still, and maybe even could better sound like Mickey because it was a falsetto versus just a high voice. So that is really where I started practicing Mickey. And it's funny because it took me, I was being asked that all the time. Like, when did you start doing the voice? When did you start? And I couldn't really pinpoint it. I was like, I don't know. But the more I recounted childhood stories and the more Fantasmic kept coming up, I thought, you know what? That's it. I was in my room playing Fantasmic and that's when I started doing the voice.
But then Grown Up Brett, as one of your many projects, got to record audio for the new Fantasmic that was launching at Disneyland.
That's right. Fantasmic 2.0, as I've heard it called several times. Yeah. So much like I discussed the process of getting a recording gig, I was emailed and they said, hey, we've got a record for Fantasmic. How's next Tuesday? And I said, sure, great. And I thought, okay, Fantasmic, it must be for overseas. And I recorded the Tokyo version of Fantasmic so that the Japanese actor could basically be inspired by my performance. So I recorded first and then they were going to dub it in Japanese, understandably so. So I assumed it was something similar to that, maybe for Shanghai or I don't know. I go in and I'm handed the script and it is a script that's very familiar to me because it's all of the Disneyland lines. And I remember saying, oh, we're doing Disneyland? And they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I said, well, is it necessary? Because given my personal attachment to that show, that was like the one thing I did not want to tread on Wayne's performance. I'm really good friends with Bill Rogers, who is the voice. The best way to say it is the voice of Disneyland. Whenever you're there and you hear, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. And he does not like when I do that. But that's what he does. And he
that's
does
your all, impression of
that's,
him.
That's my impression. And he does fantastic announcements throughout the park. And that's that voice we know and love. Well, before him was a gentleman named Jack Wagner. And Jack did it for a long time. And in doing it, he did like the now boarding at the Disneyland train station. And also when you get off of the Matterhorn bobsleds and hear, permanece sentados, por favor, which I apologize to everyone who speaks Spanish. I just butchered it. I know. But those are Jack's performances and they're still there. And Bill has told me personally at dinner, he's like, those are the two things I will never do. If they ever need that to be replaced for whatever reason, I will argue it and say, no, I don't want to do it. Leave those as Jack. And I kind of felt the same way about Fantasmic because I loved it. And I know so many other people did and shared in that love. And so I didn't want to be the guy responsible for replacing it and saying like, oh, it doesn't sound as good. But at the same time, what an honor to be able to work on a project that was so near and dear to me because, you know, now I'm thinking about being a kid and loving the show and I'm getting asked to be a part of it. Like, it was so cool. Well, they had discussed that there was the potential for them to leave Wayne's line, some imagination, huh, in at the end. And I should preface all of this by saying the need to re-record came with the restructuring of the show, adding a new soundtrack, changing a few elements. And in 1992, when they did it and they edited it and they put it in the cans, as it were, and sent it off, it was done. They didn't have, like we have today, a track that's all isolated and different layers where you can pick and pull and take out a voice and put in a different one. So it was necessary because they couldn't just pick from the old stuff. You would have had the old background music and old sound effects on top of that. Mm-hmm. So they needed clean audio. So then at that point, my goal became, you know, copying and honoring that performance as closely as possible. And I remember kind of giggling to myself because the show director said, you know, okay, so we're doing Fantasmic. Are you familiar with it? Have you seen it? And I thought, have I seen it?
You're like, I don't even need the script.
I didn't need the script. They're like, okay, we're going to play the audio for you, and then you're going to do your time, and then we'll play it again so you can get used to it. And I was like, let's go. And I wasn't that obnoxious, I promise. But yeah, we went through the process, and then in the end, they decided, let's get you recording some Imagination Hot just in case maybe the Wayne line isn't as clean as we hoped we could get it, and we need to use the new audio. Okay, fine. Yeah, so that's how that process went. Again, one and done, and you know, like a 30, 40 minute afternoon of my day, and then kind of life goes on.
And then the summer of 2017 arrives, and it is the new show is debuting at Disneyland.
That's right.
And I was one of many people that had tickets to attend.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
I know.
I'm so jealous because I was at the D23 Expo, and I can't even remember what I was doing there. Each expo is kind of blended together with all the running around I do. But yeah, I learned that they were giving out those passes to go see the premiere of Fantasmic, and I was so jealous. I remember thinking, wait, I want to go see this. I want to see if it. And I asked several people, like, any chance I could get a ticket? Like, sorry, they've all been given out. Or sorry, they're all for annual pass holders or expo attendees. Like, that's all been, it's all very strict and we can't. And I was like, but I worked on it. Can I? And they're like, sorry. So, regardless of that, I had plans. A member of Club 33 had invited to take my family and I to dinner that night. And so, of course, happy to oblige that invitation, went to the parks, had dinner. And afterwards, my brother Corey and I were just wandering the parks. My mom was there too with my aunt, and we got separated for one reason, but we were deciding what to do, and we're walking towards Big Thunder Mountain, and Fantasmic starts. And I remember thinking, okay, well, there's a little space here. It's not too crowded, and we can at least watch and hear. So let's just stop and see how it goes. So we didn't have the best view or anything, but we could see enough and hear it. So we started to watch it, and it starts, and Mickey starts, you know, observing all the magic. Wow. I'm like, okay, that's cool. And then the lines continue, and hey, oh, what's going on? Oh. And each time getting, you know, a little bit of goosebumps thinking, oh my gosh, that's crazy. I got to be a part of that. That's so cool. Okay. That sounds good. I'm happy with this performance. The finale comes, and the Mark Twain rounds the bend, and the fireworks go off, and they start waving the flags, and so exciting. And you get to the crescendo, big moment at the end, and Sorcerer Mickey's on top, and then he appears at the bottom, and all of a sudden it's time for that line. And I'm ready to walk away just because I was like, that was fantastic. Let's go get on the ride. I love that. And I hear some imagination, huh? And it was me. And I was stopped dead in my tracks. Like, I did not know how to respond because, like you said, full circle. When you have, like, for anyone who's been blessed enough to experience a full circle moment in life, the reason it's called full circle is because it starts at a place in your life where you may have no idea that you're even going to come back around to that experience. And that was me, you know, 7 years old playing Fantasmic in my room, and later using a sprinkler and spraying around the yard, I never once thought to imagine a scenario where 30 years later, I was standing at Disneyland, a place I knew all so well, watching a character, Mickey Mouse, who I adored and loved so much, and then hearing his voice and me being responsible for providing that at such an iconic point. To be quite honest, I lost it. I bawled my eyes out. It didn't help that my brother Corey was standing there and put his arm on my shoulder and said, did you ever imagine when we were kids playing Fantasmic that one day your voice would be playing on these speakers here at Disneyland? And, you know, that experience kind of summed up the emotional place that I hold Mickey to this day, because Mickey's not just a corporate icon. He's not just a cartoon character. He's, to me, he represents fun, you know, genuine love and friendship and creativity and the legacy of Walt, and imagination, and specifically the imagination of so many kids and adults, but more specifically, my imagination, my childhood ability to dream and see things that had yet to come, but that I desired to achieve. And so in that moment, it was just, you know, an unavoidable reminder that, as hokey as it is to say, dreams come true and there is magic in the world. And it's okay to believe that. And it's okay to experience it and enjoy it. Because trust me, I can be a cynical person. And so in that moment, it was a great reminder that lighten up, enjoy it. And yes, celebrate those moments. And really, it reminded me to do what I could to share my story in the hopes that I could inspire other people the way I was. You know, I have 4 nieces and 1 nephew and another one on the way. And all I want is to teach them that they can go play Fantasmic. And in playing Fantasmic, they can dream an impossible dream. And you know what? That dream's maybe not as impossible as you think.
That's right. You're a living testament. I think that moment for you would have been full circle, but I think the fact that your brother was there made it even better, right?
Oh, yeah. I couldn't have planned it that way. I think, like, looking back, that's what made it so powerful. It really wasn't the loudspeakers of the fireworks. It was sharing an emotional moment with, you know, my brother, who I love and has been my sidekick for so long and still is, you know, like, he's the one who was willing to light up the fireworks and wave the hose with me to play Fantasmic. But he's the one now who's helping me restore a 1938 truck. And when I'm talking about buying a train and opening up a restaurant that's based on trains, he's like, let's do it. So that's the guy that, you know, shared in that belief in me. And so in that moment, yeah, it was incredible to see it with him.
Even though your invite wasn't proper, in my opinion, I'm glad you ultimately did get that experience together.
Thank you. I hesitate sharing that part of the story because I've had a few people who think that I sound disgruntled or, you know, belligerent. I'm like, not at all. I was just jealous. I understand the politics and the reasons why. And, you know, like, no, I don't get invited every time there's a Mickey thing. And there's like I said, there's a lot of people responsible for Fantasmic who didn't get an invite that night. So yes. Why me over anyone else? But yeah, I was really jealous. But you know what? The invite may not have come the way I would have imagined it was, but it worked out the way it should. And isn't that true of so many of the greatest moments in life, that things happen when you least expect it?
That's right. I don't know if it's possible to top that theme park story, but let's talk about the parks a little bit more.
Okay.
So I know you grew up going to Disneyland. That's kind of where a lot of this started for you. Do you have an annual pass to the parks?
I don't, but I did. When I went to school in Florida, I had an annual pass for Walt Disney World. But now, along with that whole honorary cast member, I'm very lucky that they've given me a main gate pass like cast members have. So I can go down to the park and visit and hang out with my friends and family.
Good. So you get to go in.
I get to go in, yes.
Yes.
When they're open.
That's right. So how often do you visit? Because you're relatively close.
Yeah. You know, I get down. I'm not an every day or a once a week person, but I went a lot more frequently when I first got the job and moved here because I was a little less busy. Things have ramped up, and so it's harder for me to get down there. But I get down as often as I can, and I love Disneyland. I love Walt Disney World. There's nothing like a Walt Disney World vacation. So I was just, I'm trying to think when I was in Disneyland just a week before they closed during the safe at home order. And I was in Disney World 2 weeks before that. So I'm there a lot. I'm probably there more than I realize. I always say, oh, I don't go that often, but I do. And I love it.
I follow you on Instagram. I know that you.
Okay. I've been, yep. You know.
You're with your, you have your Disney sidekick, Ashley.
Oh, yes. Me and you Ashley. We have a lot of fun there.
And she's not just Ashley, though, right? She has her, she's well known as well.
Oh, Ashley is extremely well known and for so many different things. She's the voice of Ahsoka Tano on Star Wars Clone Wars, as well as the founder of Her Universe, the amazing clothing line that catered originally to the female fan, but now really caters to every fan. And she is an incredible person. I have learned so much from her. And we were just become quick best friends. Like, we joke that, you know, there must be alternate realities in which we have always been, as close as we are. But in this one, it just took us a little bit longer to find each other. But when we did, we made up for lost time. We have so much in common. Our stories are so parallel. I adore her. We have so much fun together. I was just talking to her yesterday and texting her this morning. So
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Y'all look like you have a lot of fun. I follow you both. So
Good.
It's fun to see you guys doing stuff together.
Yeah. And she is my hype friend, as she labeled herself. And I have to thank her so much for that, because I'm not the best at social media. She is. And so she's always like, you need to do this. You need to do that. I'm going to get you introduced to this person and that person. And she's so like genuine in her intent. And I love it.
Love that. We all need those people in our lives.
Absolutely.
So outside of voice work, I know you've designed some stuff for Disney.
Yeah. I've been fortunate enough to basically been designing for Disney since I started as the voice of Mickey. And originally I was designing, and still am, but I've done some Disney fine art. I did a few paintings early on. More recently, I've been doing a silkscreen poster series inspired by my love of national parks and the outdoors, and merging that with the Disney experience and Mickey. So it's essentially Mickey visiting these different parks. I've had one piece based on Yosemite that came out at the last D23 Expo, and I have a current piece celebrating Sequoia National Forest that's coming out in the next week. And on top of that, I was asked to design a pair of Mickey ears for the mm-hmm. Get Your Ears On campaign.
And I'm They're super, great.
Oh, thank you. I just saw them at an event in Florida at Disney World. I'd seen pictures during the process, but I finally got to see and feel and wear them. I don't look too good wearing Mickey ears, ironically. This big bald head doesn't really suit the look. But... yeah, they came out great. I based it on, I wanted to kind of celebrate the old school recording. Again, kind of hearkening back to Walt's day of recording Mickey, since that's where it all started. And as when performing Mickey, that's what I think about. So I based it kind of on that old 30s, 40s feel of some felt and the way the microphones looked back then, a little retro MMC logo on the back, a little on air. Light on the crest of his head, and if you press the back of one of his ears that look like speakers, he'll say a little "oh boy," and then a little hidden thing that I don't know if everyone will notice, but on the back of one of the ear speakers, there is a little relief or is that the right word? Yeah, it's a relief. It's etched there on the back of the ear, and it says November 18th, 1928. And of course, that's Mickey's birthday. That was designated after research and discovering that that's the day that Steamboat Willie premiered at the Colony Theater in New York. So I wanted to definitely give that ode to Mickey on the back of those. But still waiting to hear on the final release date of those. You know, things are kind of in flux right now, and a few releases have been postponed. So hopefully by the end of the year, but thank you for following me on Instagram. And if anyone wants to follow along, I will release that information when I have it so that everyone can go enjoy those.
I surely hope you get a pair of those.
I have a pair, and it's sitting upstairs in my house right now. Yes.
Good. That seems only fair.
Yes.
That makes sense. It occurs to me that when you're just a naturally creative person, it can seep out in so many ways. You know, like Jodie Benson, Ariel, is an artist, and it was at Festival of the Arts with her paintings, and yours comes out in all kinds of ways. So there's like no limit.
Oh, absolutely. And then there shouldn't be. I mean, creativity is just a way of expressing ourselves, right? And I know a lot of people say, I'm not creative. I don't have a creative bone in my body. And I argue that. I think all of us have an ability to be creative and an ability to express ourselves, whether that's in the way you garden or a painting, like you said, or acting, or maybe it's cooking, or, you know, there's like so many little ways to exhibit that creativity. But yeah, it knows no bounds and it shouldn't.
So that brings me to Bungalow Modern.
Ah, okay.
Which is, I would assume, another creative outlet for you.
Yeah. And one that I don't get to talk about all that often. So I appreciate that. Bungalow Modern is a design company that I started back in, I'm trying to remember now, 2015. So I have always had an eye for architectural design and interiors. And it really was kind of a debate in my mind whether to pursue illustration or interior design. And naively, back when I was making that choice, I thought, oh, interior design is curtains and pillows, and I don't want to do that. I'm ashamed that I thought that way because it is not. But I've been a big fan of Craftsman homes in particular, because I grew up in Pasadena, California, and we're known for having a lot of those, a lot of history of green and green architecture and Stickley. So I was surrounded by it, I guess, is the best way to say it. When it came time for me to pursue buying a house, I looked at several different options, and my realtor took me to one, and I fell in love with it at the curb because it was what I imagined a Craftsman bungalow to be. It was a major fixer-upper, and so I entered into an endeavor of years and am still in the middle of restoration on it. And in doing so, I had a lot of people take notice and say, hey, you're doing a really great job. Can you help me on my thing? Or do you have any advice? And friends and family would always ask me how to design their living room or lay out this or lay out that. And so at a certain point, I thought, you know what? And I had some friends encouraging me along the way, but I thought, why don't I try and turn this into a business? So I started Bungalow Modern. Vintage restoration with modern aesthetic is my tagline. And I started it out of my home, and it didn't take very long at all to start getting clients, just by word of mouth, essentially. And so, yeah, it's a great passion of mine, where I've worked on everything from, you know, residential kitchens to, I did a country club redesign a few years ago. I've designed a couple themed restaurants recently. And yeah, much like you said about creativity, the sky's the limit, and I've got a few other things I'd like to do, but it's, you know, antique restoration. I've got a collection of wooden wagons from the early 1900s in my backyard right now, which is, you know, slightly embarrassing, but I will get around to fixing them. So I take on everything and anything I can design-wise, basically.
And is there a connection with your brother with Bungalow Modern?
Well, my brothers have all, my family, I would say, is a very creative family. And so they are always willing to participate and help me with my business. So yeah, my brothers have been a big part of it, specifically with restoring this truck that I mentioned earlier, that is going to be the Bungalow Modern truck. But yeah, it's kind of the family helps out here, here and there for sure.
I thought I remembered like one of your brothers had a business and you participated in designing that. Maybe that one's not right.
Oh, I'm trying to think, because I
know you've done restaurants. There's been all kinds of different avenues for this, I think, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to think what that might have been or what may have seemed like my brother, but
might not have been.
I don't know.
You've had all different kinds of projects. It's hard to keep straight.
Yeah, so exactly.
You have your voice work. You have Bungalow Modern. You've done some design work for Disney. You had a Voice Your Dreams tour.
Yeah, Voice Your Dreams is a tour that Ashley and I are doing, and we're really excited to launch that this year. We got one show under our belt, and then unfortunately, Comic-Cons and appearances that we were booked at had to be canceled during the COVID-19 crisis. But that doesn't mean we're done. We're still on hold, and we're just looking forward to getting back out there. But you know, kind of that friendship that Ashley and I established was based on our similarities, like I mentioned. And with those similarities was a creative process that we thought was worth sharing with everybody. And a big part of that process was realizing that at a certain point, we were given permission to dream, whether that was from our parents or maybe just our own motivation. But we want to help people experience that permission to pursue the things that they maybe think aren't likely or aren't possible. And we just want to give people the courage to dream, the permission to do so. And that starts with voicing your dream, just saying it out loud or writing it on a piece of paper, saying, you know, I want to do blank. And so that's what we're going to do when we finally get around to touring the country. We're just going to kind of have a chat and tell people our stories and hope that inspires and motivates others.
I love the concept of it because it's kind of a double meaning. You're literally voices.
Exactly. Exactly. That, yep.
I'm so quick to
catch on. I'm glad you caught on to that. Thank you. Thank you. We put a lot of thought into it.
Well, I hope you do get to reschedule that when the time is right. So I'm not sure if you have any time in your schedule, but have you ever thought about starting a podcast of your own?
You know, I've been doing a lot more of them lately, and it has come to mind where I'm like, that could be kind of fun. You know, Ashley and I have another big part of Voice Your Dreams is that we love working with each other and being around each other. And rather than wait for somebody to say, hey, we love you two working together, come do this with us, we thought, we're just going to start on our own. So we started the Voice Your Dreams. But now I'm thinking, gosh, a podcast with Ashley would be fun. I'd love to do a podcast on trains or design, or I don't know. I love these opportunities to be interviewed on podcasts like yours, because I don't often get to share a lot of these stories and go as in depth with some of these topics. So it's great. But I honestly don't. I think the biggest thing holding me back is just the time commitment. I admire you for the dedication and the time that you obviously invest in this. I'm so creatively divided. I'd be afraid that it's something I'd start and then would not be able to deliver on my promise.
Voice Your Dreams, the podcast. I think that would be amazing.
Maybe after a year of touring, we will kick off a podcast. That could be a great intro. Why not?
Yes. Why not? I will subscribe and be happy to listen to you guys.
Okay.
Is there anything we miss? Is there anything that you want to talk about that you're working on?
Let's see. I mean, you really hit it out of the park with all those topics. I can't think of anything. We touched on the art, we touched on design, the voiceover. You know, there's a few series with Mickey coming out, but nothing really worth sharing at this point. I think you got it all.
Good. And so where's the best place for people to find you online who aren't already following you?
So please go ahead and follow me on Instagram at Brett with one T _ Iwin, IWAN. And yes, that's how you say it. Iwin. So Brett _ Iwin on Instagram. I've got a Facebook page. I think I have a Twitter, but the fact that I just said I think means I'm not very active on it. So if you really want to follow along, follow me on Instagram. I'm a visual person. I love posting pictures, and I'm trying my best to keep up with Ashley. So yeah.
Yes, your hype girl. She's going to keep you current and modern.
My hype friend is going to make sure that I post at least once a week, even if it's just a picture of banana bread that I baked last night. I will do it.
Well, I will link to all those in the notes of this podcast for people to follow along. And I appreciate you joining me so much, Brett.
Oh, this has been such a treat, Shannon. Thanks so much for having me.
So that was lovely, right? Did any part of that make you tear up? There might be a 1-minute clip from that interview that I keep on my phone because I love it so much. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed doing it. I think that will wrap up this episode of WDW Prep to Go. For information on this show, you can always check the show notes or go to the website, click on podcast at the top, and scroll down to episode 249. Until next time, I will see you on the site.